everyone, and welcome to Real Estate Right Now, where we talk about real estate matters that matter to you. We are live from the Linda Craft Team Studios here in Raleigh, North Carolina, part of the Research Triangle Park. I'm going to tell you something. Today's show is, how do I put this? We're going to go back to school. That's what we're going to do. You know, people have asked regularly, I want to rent a property, and I don't really understand how to do that. And we've had talks about renting property on this show before. But what about, you know, what is a good introduction to getting your first rental, and what should you know? Well, listen, I'm going to tell you what today's guest, he really knows. He's the professor. I like to call him the professor, Professor Steve Krueger. He's actually a selling and buyer specialist at Linda Craft Team Realtors, but he deals a lot with rental properties, and he actually has an example that he's going to share with us today. So we're going to talk today about, you know, an introduction into getting your first rental property and what you should know. And Professor Steve Krueger is going to do that with us. Steve, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. I like that. The professor.
The professor. I love it. I think that fits you, actually. You know?
That.
Yeah, no, it does. It fits you because, you know, what I learned about you last time you were on the show was that you have this economics degree from University of Tennessee.
Correct.
Sadly. Sadly, who kind of didn't show up this past Saturday.
It's okay. We're going to get another shot.
We're going to get another shot at him. So, let's talk about, you know, getting a rental property here. Because people, you know, are interested, you know, is this a good time to purchase a rental? I mean, should I do it? And when you talk to people about rental properties and, you know, purchasing a rental property, and I know you deal with that on some level, what are you telling people right now when it comes to purchasing their first rental property?
So if they're getting into their rental property for the first time, there's two big questions there, or one big question, two answers. Are you paying cash or are you going to finance it?
Okay.
If you're paying cash right now, fantastic. There's going to be a little bit better buying opportunities than what we saw the last 2 years. And so that's going to help you as far as buying something. And then when you're paying cash, you're essentially cash flowing on the property right away, where right. When you're financing, not so much. And at these higher interest rates, that can get more complicated. But there's great opportunities even if you're financing a rental property right now, because right. Once the rates start going down, you'll probably see prices start going back up. So there's sort of an offset there as well.
So last week we had Doug Schoonmaker on here, and who talked with us and gave something I never heard before, and I know it's common. He said, I couldn't believe it, and that is, marry the mortgage, date the rate. Does that right. still apply even in the rental game when you're purchasing a rental property?
It does, because if you're financing the property, then right now, so let's say you finance something right now, and to do a rental property, you might have to do that at like an 8% interest rate.
Right.
So, which does cut into your profitability at first. But the hope is that at some point you would refinance that to a much lower rate, in which case you're starting to make better return on that investment, maybe even starting to cash flow a little bit. So you certainly like to do it at a lower interest rate. But like I said earlier, from everything I've heard, not just from lenders, but if you know the amount of research I do, things I read, we do expect, you know, interest rates maybe get back down within a year to, say, 5%.
Okay.
If you were to buy something right now and refinance it at 5%, your numbers look a lot better at that 5% interest rate. But what I expect is once we get to about 5% interest in this, here in the Triangle, but it's really going to be nationwide, is as things are slowing down a little bit because of these interest rates, there's pent-up demand. Just like we had, if you think about what happened during the pandemic, we had several months of pent-up demand. People were just, let's face it, they were afraid to even go into someone else's home, let people into their homes. So everybody that would have been buying back in, say, March, April, May of 2020, the market kind of sprung loose in June of 2020. Because you all of a sudden had not just your normal June buying, but you had your March, April, May, June buying. You had lower inventory because people hadn't been putting their houses on the market. Created this perfect storm that really just snowballed for 2 years. And I'm not saying it's going to be anything like that when these interest rates come back down. But let's just say a year from now they're 5%. I do expect that a whole lot of pent-up demand all of a sudden start saying, okay, now I'm ready to buy. I can buy a house at 5%. I'm ready to buy a house. Supply is still, we still have a supply problem in this country. And the builders are slowing everything down. So I think you'll see the prices go up, and you might even have a short-term spike where they go way up over the first few months after that happens. And so even though you're buying that house, say, a year from now at 5%, your interest, you're maybe having to buy that house at a higher price than what you'd buy it for right now versus buying it right now at this higher interest rate and then just refinancing it down the road. So, yeah, I think there's great opportunities whether you're paying cash or refinancing. Not refinancing, but financing.
All right. So let's get into the professor. Let's get into some of this terminology, because we've had guests on the show here before who talked about cap rates, and still people are confused about cap rates. Yep. Right, because it's short for capitalization rate. So, Professor, as an introductory class to the guests who are watching or listening to the show, can you give us a simplified definition of what a cap rate really is?
Yep. So the cap rate is pretty simple. You've got to do some things to come up with your figures, but it's essentially where you just take the acquisition price of that house. And I brought an example of a house that I happened to spot online in our MLS recently that had sold in the last few months, and then they were buying it as a rental property because it went up for rent and rented out just a couple months later. And so if you look at that house, was purchased for $437,500. The cap rate is that price, $437,500, and then you figure out what your net operating income is. And so your net operating income is where you're taking what you expect your rent to be. So that house, it's real easy because the number on that, I saw that it later rented for $2,490 a month. So you take that $2,490, multiply that by 12, that's your gross operating income for a year. And that worked out to $29,880. Then you want to look at, well, what are your costs? And your costs, if you paid cash for the home, your costs are then going to be your property taxes. You're going to have your homeowner's insurance. You're going to have your HOA dues if the neighborhood's in an HOA community. If you are going to hire a property manager to manage the property for you, you have that expense. You can have a more profitable operation if you manage the property yourself. And if you're just starting out in all this and you do want to build a portfolio and finance your very first rental property, managing it yourself would be the smart way to go because you are eliminating a pretty big cost. So property manager might charge, say, 10% of the rent. So on that particular house, you know, the rent's almost $30,000 a year. You're paying $3,000 to a property manager that you don't have to if you manage it yourself. Now, there's reasons to want a property manager, and the more properties you get, I certainly advise it because they're going to screen applicants for you. They're going to find the renters for you. They're the ones that have to deal with the tenant who all of a sudden the HVAC's not working at 3 o'clock in the morning, and they're probably not going to reach the property manager on the phone at that point, but they're going to be reaching out to them and expect something to be done immediately. So that's a cost, certainly, if you're going to use a property manager. And then you've got maintenance. And maintenance is the one part. Well, you got two things there: vacancy and your maintenance. I'm being very conservative when I do these numbers so that I feel like I have what's probably an even better cap rate than what I'm estimating, but as long as I hit within a certain range, then that's a good investment, right? So maintenance for this particular property, I put $3,000 a year. That's pretty high. You're probably not going to have $3,000 a year maintenance, but if you think about it over 10 years, and that's $30,000, 10 years from now on that house, you might have to replace the HVAC. You might have to replace the roof. If you replace both those within the next 10 years, then you did probably spend $30,000. You're also probably painting when people move out. And so all these various costs. So you're going to want to do your own estimates on what it's going to cost to maintain that house. That's also I'm digressing, but the age of the house can play a big part. So maybe you're buying your first rental property and you want something that's probably going to be fairly low maintenance. The newer the house, you're going to have less likely have repairs versus the older house. The older house is going to give you a little bit better potential value opportunity. So it just depends where you are in the whole investment part of your portfolio and your life. But once you factor all those net operating income costs, the cap rate is just based on basically your net operating income and your acquisition costs. So what you're wanting is a cap rate somewhere, the range they talk about is 4 to 10%. It's going to be awfully hard to find something in the 10% range. And I would be aiming at the moment for something closer to 4%, because even though rent rates have been steadily rising and will probably continue to steadily rise, the values of homes over the last 2 years shot up at an even faster rate, which affects cap rates, because now you're having to acquire that property at a higher price than what the rent you're going to be able to get for it is versus 2 years ago. So that property that I mentioned, the net operating income after I calculated all those things was $20,835, which gave us a cap rate of 4.76% on a $437,500 purchase.
So did we divide the 30 into that?
Right. You divided the 20,000 by the 437,500.
Okay.
Or is it the other way around? Yeah, it's that way.
Right.
And so it came up with the 4.76%. So that is in that range, 4 to 10%. You'd love to see 5%, but on that particular house, it was built in, I want to say, 2016. So especially if it's my first investment property, I'd be happy to get that cap rate of 4.76% on a property that I'm not going to have to probably spend too much maintaining over the next several years.
Now, if we finance this, then we're pulling out. Is that right? We pull out our mortgage out of that as well.
And that changes the cap rate drastically, and that's where you got to be careful. So that cap rate number is a lot easier to work off of for a cash buyer, because you take that same property right now and finance it at 8%, and you're going to need to put 20 to 25% down on that house. Your actual net operating income could be in the negative for several years. It eventually goes into the positive as rent rates increase, because they tend to increase by, we'll call it 3% a year. But that gets a little bit more complicated. That's one of the reasons you want somebody like me to give you good advice on that property. But what's interesting there is when you, if you were to finance that property, is your return on investment down the line, because when you're using leverage to your advantage, you can, for one thing, keep acquiring more properties and not have nearly as much cash to start the whole process with. But when you look at the return on investment after a long period of time, let's say after 10 years, I did the math on that as well. And that house, if it appreciated 5% a year for the next 10 years, is then worth over $700,000. And so if you just sold it after 10 years, and let's forget the operating income and several other factors, let's just say what you profited from the purchase price versus the sale price, then it's like $260,000, something like that. If you
if we're talking about ROI here, then what we're saying is, hold it here. It's not just the rental income. We also have
appreciation.
We should also have appreciation, and you own something here. So it's not just the cap rate,
right,
that we have to look at here, because you actually own something that's sellable later,
right,
that you're making a return on investment on here as well, because you have something tangible,
right,
that you're working with. And I think you've said this before, or somebody has said this before, and I think it was you, and it may have been Tony. But I think the thing is that now that you have that return on investment from that property, now what that gives you is you can have some leverage, right, to maybe borrow against that property.
Right. So that's part of the Burr method.
Oh, well, let's not get there yet.
We'll go there. Professor,
we don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves here. By the way, watching and listening to Real Estate Right Now, and we're talking about an introduction to renting your first property. And Steve has been giving us an example of a property that he's done some research on and how to make that work for you. By the way, you can always write your comments if you're watching us live. You can always enter your comments in, and we'll be happy to answer those questions as well. All right, so we got ROI, we got cap rates. I think that was a really nice explanation there. Let's talk about working with an expert and building your team.
Mm-hmm. So like we were talking about cap rates, that's a great way to first analyze, is this even a good property to invest in? To get all those figures, you're going to need, first of all, a great real estate agent, because they're going to be able to tell you what the they're going to help you just figure out what the rent rate is going to be, right? I can run a rent analysis for you. There are the people that specialize, like property managers, can give you an even better analysis. And I have access to a property manager that I can reach out to and say, hey, here's the property my client wants to buy. What do you think the rent rate's going to be? Maybe he thinks it's a little higher, a little lower, whatever. But I can help you calculate that. You're going to want a good handyman. You're going to want a good contractor. You're going to want a good painter. Now the contractor could possibly do that, but you have a whole team of people. You're also really going to want to have a good accountant. And if you're financing all these things, you want to have a good lender. I've got great lenders that I can recommend to people. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you've got a whole team of people there, because the accountant I mentioned, there's tax advantages to all this. So you want to make sure you're talking to your accountant about how to take advantage of those things and how to get the most tax benefit from your investment. It's another reason why investing in real estate makes a lot of sense, because there's tax advantages to it.
Well, here's the thing I think about making sure that you put together a quality team is important, is because you've been doing this business for how long?
I've been 16 years.
16 years doing this business. And you've already accumulated a lot of these experts that
Correct.
You've worked with.
I've got somebody for everything.
Right.
I've got an arborist. If you got problems with your trees, I've got one for you. Name it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's the thing about having a quality expert, is that someone who's been in the business as long as you have and has quality people, you've been doing this, right. You understand, what people are wanting to get out of this.
Right.
So you want somebody who also is aware of in your area, who they can get. And you have those things available. I think that's what makes an expert, quality expert as well.
Definitely. And somebody with good market knowledge, because where you're buying, so you had alluded to this a second ago, it's not only the rental income that you're making over time, because especially if you're financing it, you may not see a lot of cash flow out of your properties for a long time. It's the appreciation on that property. Mm. And I certainly, as somebody that sells 40 to 50 houses every single year, I know the market. If you said you wanted to buy a property in this particular area versus this particular area, I might say, you know what, when it's between these two, I see this area probably appreciating better. I see this area being easier to find renters for. We're in an area that's just blowing up as far as people moving here. You got a lot of young professionals coming here. So if you're buying sort of an entry-level home, you're going to have an easier time finding renters for it if it's in the areas where those folks want to live than being somewhere that's sort of out on the periphery. Now that house out on the periphery might just turn out to be the best value that we can find, especially if you want something pretty cheap in the beginning. But, for example, RTP in our area, which is if you're not from the Triangle, that's Research Triangle Park, and there's all the big tech companies are there, and if they're not, they're coming. And people want to live close to that. The young people that are moving here, taking those jobs, want to live fairly close to that because that's where they're working. So if you were to acquire a property that's within a short 10, 15-minute drive of there, that's going to be a little more appealing than a place that's a 40-minute drive from there.
Which goes, I think, plays hand in hand here with this question, and that is, oftentimes we say in real estate, location, location, location.
Right.
So in rentals, when it's concerning rentals, that's still an important,
sure.
Maybe even more so.
It is. There's two things going on there. So your budget's going to have a lot to do with it, right? If you tell me, hey, I can only invest enough to buy a $175,000 house, we're probably not looking in the areas that are going to be right. quite as appealing there. But you certainly should start the process because you can build your portfolio over time, and we can find something in that price range somewhere. But if you've got a little more to spend and you want to be, I would say that when we were talking about those net operating income numbers, one of the figures I had was when I came up with my cap rate was a month's vacancy. You shouldn't really end up with a month's vacancy over a, say, 10-year period of time. But I put that into my estimate to be very conservative because you may have a month or two in between renters. And so, if, especially if you're always on a one-year lease and then all of a sudden they're moving out, you're going to have that vacancy. So having a property where it's easier to find renters, you're reducing your vacancy, which is increasing your profitability. So if you have a very popular area, and then that goes hand in hand with if you can get someone to sign a two-year lease, you know, a three-year lease, that can be beneficial too because now you have less vacancy and you have less turnover costs because every time somebody moves out, you usually have some expense getting the house back up. So, but yes, the more desirable the location is going to apply to purchasing the same way it does to renting because the most popular areas to buy a house in is because we want to live there, right? If you want to live downtown to be close to all the action that's in a downtown area, the same applies to wanting to rent down there. So the more desirable areas to live are going to be the more desirable areas to rent.
Yeah, I think this is where I think people may get a little misled in that I think there is a misconception that the house is always going to be rented. But as someone who has rentals,
right.
When people move out, you know, you're usually changing the carpet, maybe up doing the paint because there's just wear and tear. It's just normal wear and tear. Yep. You know, if they've been in there for a year or maybe you have them several years and you're not going to be able to put somebody in right away because you've got to clean all that up.
Right.
Right. I mean, you know, depending on what you have. And so it's not realistic that you're going to rent it every single month, 100% of the time, because you've got work to do in between renters.
Exactly.
And I think that's part of, you know, for people who are interested in a rental property, you got to consider that. And I think that's why you build in the 1 month because you're thinking, okay, you're going to, you know, 30 days, you can get everything cleaned up and, you know, be working on your next renter at the same time.
Right.
Is why you're doing
yep.
that. And
like
sense.
I said, it's a fairly conservative estimate. Hopefully over those 10 years, you have somebody that stays more than, you know, you're not having to replace right. a tenant every single year. So if you get the same person that lives there for 7 out of 10 years and the next one's in there for 3 years, you might have 1 month of vacancy the entire 10 years plus cheaper turnover costs. And now my estimate was way too high and your initial cap rate was much higher. Plus your return on investment is going to be better and everything else. So anything you can do to minimize vacancy is going to make you more profitable. And that's also a really good lesson for as a homeowner, the homeowner slash landlord. I took a great class just recently on investing in real estate, and the guy owns a lot of rental properties, and he had some really great advice, which was, he really wants his tenants to like him because they're going to take better care of his house. They're hopefully going to maybe stay more than a year, that sort of thing. So he just does, they move in and he gives them a gift card for a free pizza when they're moving into the house for the first time, things like that. So certainly once you become a landlord, don't be the landlord that everybody hates, the guy that's, you know, featured in a movie and he's essentially Scrooge of landlords. You want to be the landlord that everybody loves. Because even if your tenant's moving out, they may have a friend, you know, especially if you're talking about a kind of place that's popular with young people. They might be like moving out and somebody they work with, they're like, you want to go live there. You know, the landlord's great. The house is great. You know, take care of the house, do those things. And it's going to pay dividends in the long run.
Well, I think this is the other thing. You know, I think we all know what the definition of a bad landlord is,
right?
I think, but one of the things I think that is so important when people are investing, and I know you're going to agree with me on this, is when there is a problem, and problems are going to happen, you know, the toilet flap's not working or broke,
right.
Get on it.
Exactly.
Don't wait. Just get on it immediately, right? I mean, I think that's a goodwill piece of saying, "Hey, I'm on this, and somebody's going to be over there, you know, in the next before the day's up, and they're going to get this fixed." I think people have, and I think again that goes back to what you're saying: build a quality team because you don't want it. You may have a plumber,
right?
But he's so busy, he's 2 weeks out,
right? Yeah, if you're so especially now, if you have a property manager, they can handle a lot of that. So you still want somebody like me that has a team for the things outside of what the property manager does. But if you do have a property manager, they'll handle those things. They have their own people. Mm-hmm. But especially if you're managing it on your own, you do want some really good connections to make sure those things are addressed when they need to be addressed. So you're like, I have a great appliance guy, right? When the appliance goes bad, nobody likes to be without their dishwasher. I had to go without mine for a couple of weeks recently. Our washing machine wasn't working. It wasn't draining water. And actually, my appliance guy was so booked up, it was going to be 2 weeks. I watched a YouTube video and just figured out how to change out the drain pump myself because I didn't want to wait 2 weeks for my washing machine to work. Like, appliances are key. So you want a good appliance repair person. And it goes on and on throughout the whole house. Another piece of advice I can give anybody that already owns rental properties or plans to own rental properties, I've sold a lot of houses that have, it's not necessarily that I was representing somebody buying a rental property. I have sold properties that were rental properties, and the landlords always seemed surprised because they didn't bother, like, for one, just viewing the house every so often, but they didn't do any maintenance. I had somebody that sold a rental property that they'd had tenants in there for like 15 years, and then they were shocked when they had all this rotted siding and everything else. Your tenants aren't responsible for fixing the siding, and they're not going to fix the siding. So if you don't take care of those things and you have all this deferred maintenance, it's going to cost you even more money somewhere down the road. So take care of the house the same way as if you live in it. You want to make sure you're aware when the siding needs work or whatever it is. So maybe you have, you know, somebody go just walk around the outside of the house, or I would certainly have like an HVAC inspection every 6 months, that sort of thing, or maintenance, the maintenance package on HVAC, not inspection.
We're done here.
We'll have to go over BRRRR on another episode.
We never got to BRRRR.
We didn't.
Right. So if people have questions that they would like to ask you about purchasing their first rental property and getting a little more information, how can they get a hold of you?
They can call me at 919-740-9795, or they can email me. You can also text me at that number, those of you that prefer text. And you can also email me, steve@lindacraft, LindaCraft.com.
That's awesome. Steve, you've been great. Thank you for this.
Thank
this has
you.
Been awesome. This Enjoyed has it. Been a great. Hey, folks, this is Real Estate Right Now. You just got an introductory course into buying your first rental property. You know what? We appreciate you choosing us. We know you had a lot of choices. You chose to listen to us and watch us. Thank you for doing that. We're going to be back next week with another great show. It's going to be another great guest. And as I say to you everywhere, all over the world, thank you and ciao, yeah, everybody. It ain't worth living if you